You're listening to the Fox and the Phoenix podcast, understanding the feminine cross-dressing experience.
I'm Savannah Hawk, dual gender male to female cross-dresser, LGBTQ plus advocate, TEDx speaker, and author of the Living with Cross-Dressing book series.
And I'm Julie Rubenstein, proud ally and co-founder of foxandhanger.com, a feminine styling and life coaching service for cross-dressers and transgender women.
Hey, Julie.
Hi, Savannah.
I missed you. We've been away too
long. I know.
I don't like it.
I know. I don't like it either. I don't like it either. I'm going to turn off my phone on silent mode. Mm-hmm. Hey, listeners, I know you're there, but we're still human. Got it. Done. Boom. Bam.
Which is ironic. You're talking about your phone because we have been out of touch.
I know.
Between shows. Typically, we're always talking about how we talk every day. We're always connecting and catching up in our lives. And man, lately it's been, hey, Julie, texty, texty, text. Are you around for Sunday? What's going on?
All right. Is anyone there? Is anyone there? I know. And for me, and I know we try to keep things, we don't like to add too many dates to have our listeners really feel like we're here present on the date it comes out, this and that. But truth be told, today is the 1st of October in our world, mm-hmm. in reality, mm-hmm. as far as how we're editing and where we are and what's going on. And I have to tell you that I don't know if you remember this last year, but typically every September is just like super hard for me. And I don't know why. And I've been, well, I do know why. I know why. And it allowed me to check in with other people and see, are there times of years that are really hard for them? And it was interesting because Kate, my business partner, she has a really hard time in spring.
Mm.
Spring is really challenging for her. There's death anniversaries. She has really bad allergies, but like just things happen. And for me, past the seasonal depression, everyone who's listening has to look forward to that will happen in the winter for me. I'll be funny, guys. I will be freaking hilarious. But I want everyone to know that I'm coming out of a very hard, hard September. And one of those things that was really hard for me was not connecting with you as much. It was sad. But I'm glad that we have our Sundays and that we skipped a few here and there for illness and ailments and travel. This podcast continues to be a bright light in my life, no matter how I'm feeling. It is definitely a homecoming and a spark that will continue to what? Burn. Burn, baby, burn. But yeah, I'm glad it's October 1st, IRL.
Yes, in real life, however, how many weeks ago this would be for our listeners?
Yeah, really.
But yes, yeah, we still got a little bit of library left. We still got a little bit of stuff in the can for people. But we're going good that way. Probably you haven't seen this, Julie Rubenstein, but check this out. Brand new chair.
Oh, nice. You got me. All your heart?
Yeah, it's a gaming chair that she got through an auction site for me. Ooh. As a gift. So instead of me being on a hard dinette chair, I now have the super cool gaming chair, partially because I needed it and partially because I'm still suffering from some sciatic type symptoms. It's been over 6 weeks. And even today, as we were waiting to come on the show, I was just like sitting here drowsing. I didn't get to sleep till 5 a.m. I cannot get rid of the pain. I've been to the doctor. I'm doing all the stuff they're telling me. I start PT next week. Savannah Sundays is taking a little bit of a hiatus. It's just a lot. It's a lot to try to put that all together on a Sunday. But I did bring my hair, let my hair flow down for you so you get to see it all nice and down instead of it being in a ponytail. But also, upcoming, in order to keep the spirit of Savannah alive and not feel like I'm pressured to do it on this day specifically, I have two podcasts this week, guest appearances coming up, one on Wednesday and on Thursday. So I will be dressing for those. And so while it's okay, I spent 90 minutes to get ready for a half hour show, at least it let me be just connected. It'll make me feel connected to Savannah. Like a little bit of effort for a little bit of gain, but I don't feel like I need to go out. I'm off on Wednesday, so I may actually spend a morning out and then just come back for the new time recording. But yeah, lately it's been a little arduous for me to make it happen. And I, again, have that always that recurring fear that we've talked about months ago, where I'm not getting enough time with Savannah in, and it's troublesome to me. I don't like being that separated from her in that way. So right now I'm in male mode, but I'm still pining for that Savannah time that I need. And I know people feel this all the time, is that if you don't get enough of that time in, you start feeling restless. You start feeling maybe a little depressed. You talk about seasonal depression. Now we can talk about gender depression in a very similar way, where you have these droughts and it just wears you down or wears you out or just makes you not as much your best self as possible.
Yeah, I agree. And this is the season where we get sick. And this is the season where even those disciplined individuals and even the most anti-disciplined individuals like me, I had a schedule. Things were balanced. I was thriving at the end of August maybe even the first week of September. But then, you know what? I got sick. Something else happened. The remodel in my house started. Then my daughter got sick. And what happens is it takes you away. It makes you compromise certain things that are your hard non-negotiables or your things that you do for yourself, because if you don't do these things, it will result in X, Y, and Z. So I think that for me, trying to have that grace for myself, I have a practice called the bar method. It's this ballet, Pilates, core, isolated muscles workout practice that I have, and I haven't been back in. Was on September 11th. Ominous. It's one of those things that it's hard not to beat yourself up for not being able to dress, when if you don't dress, you lose your identity. You lose a part of yourself that is loving and strong and fights to exist. Yeah, I can very much relate it to this exercise practice and the idea that there's something that we can count on 100%, and that's change. Change happens. People move, people get sick, people die, jobs end, all these kinds of things. And sometimes we just have to hold on to who that person is inside and be like, I will get back to you as soon as I can. But it's hard. Yeah. It is very hard.
It is. And it has been, I don't know, just kind of a recurring struggle for me. And when I'm ill and when I'm physically unwell and in pain, it takes on that added magnification or dimension. Oh my God, is this my life now? Will I never be able to wear heels again? Because now I have this leg pain. I'm feeling some sort of way about it right now.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
As an adjunct and kind of a segue into this episode topic, I was speaking to another one of my lovely friends, another fellow podcaster. Her name is Maureen Scanlon. She is the host of The Ink podcast, which is I Never Knew But My Dog Did podcast. And so I reached out to her because she was, I think she posted something and I just commented on it. And so we had a nice little dissertation. She was talking about how she had gone to a Sam Smith concert with her hubby. She sent me some pictures. I'm looking at them side by side with you. And it has Sam Smith wearing a gown on stage singing. And so she says, me and Hubs at the Sam Smith concert, gotta love a fellow crossdresser. And I said, oh, is that how they self-describe? And she says, more just about being free to be himself. I hate labels and descriptions. Do we owe anyone an explanation? A resounding thumbs down. And I said, well, we shouldn't be judged by our self-description, but those labels are important for our self-discovery and assessment. So we were having a conversation about how labels are good and how labels are bad. And I was like, wow, you know what? We've talked about labels and we talked about types of labels and we talked about how we self-describe ourselves. And I know we've inferred how many labels and hate labels, because we don't want to be put into any sort of box. So I was like, you know what? We should probably talk about the pros and cons of labels. How a label is great in one way and then the next breath could be terrible.
I think that sounds wonderful. I think that that sounds like a very relevant topic, no matter how many times we've circled around the idea of labels and how they help us or hurt us. And I think that this is this concept of having a label and really finding a home with a word, or it's different if someone else calls us that same name. There's so many complexities to it. So I think that when we review these topics over and over and look at it in different ways, I think that it's just awesome. So yeah, I'm excited to unpack this one for sure.
Yeah, I am too. And I came from a place of supposed knowledge, or at least my opinion. I think they are important. I think labels are very important. At least they have been very important for me, because without labels and exploring labels and taking one for myself off the shelf and saying, yep, this is me, this is how I describe myself. And then a year later, I'm like, ew, I don't like that label anymore. It doesn't fit me. I've outgrown it. I'm going to pick something else or whatever it might be. And over since 95, let's call it, till now, I'm constantly in this pursuit of not necessarily expansion, because I'm not looking to add more and more and more labels to my resume, but just constantly trying to find the one that works the best and fits the best. So for me, in order to be able to make that assessment of myself, how can you not do it if you don't have some sort of label or title or name in front of you to bounce it off of?
I agree. I very much agree. And it's really interesting, because had we had the labels that we have today, 10 years ago would have been so much more different. 30 years ago, 40 years ago, there's this grasping at straws idea of, who am I and am I going to be okay? Who am I and am I going to be okay? And I think that when you find a label that really fits, like for me, the word queer really fits. Whereas the word gay, I don't really identify. It doesn't feel like I identify with that, but it doesn't really feel like I identify with straight. So I think that labels and descriptors are very important for us, but also there's the idea that we can be both this and that. Mm-hmm. So as you said, you don't want to add any more to your resume of already identifiers or labels or descriptors. You do have an extensive amount, transgender, dual gender. For you, it's just that works too. That works too. I think that there is a fluidity that we must have. And also the idea that it's okay to identify with one label and the other one be really triggering. And then the next day, checking in with yourself and being like, well, that works too.
Yeah.
The one that was triggering. It's fascinating when it comes to exploring your own unique human identity and the many different colors and the many different sides there is to it. And who is it for? Is it for people to feel comfortable? Is it to make yourself feel comfortable? Is it for us to land ourselves in a home and a box? It's fascinating, really.
Yeah, it really is. Look at my story where I took on the name of transvestite, instantly hated it, and then took on the label or moniker of crossdresser, and then held on to crossdresser as like it were my identity, and then realizing it's not really an identity, it's an action that is supporting my identity, which I had then to rediscover what that meant to me in the last several years. So yeah, it's constantly a pursuit. I want to read something. This is from the TurnerSyndromeFoundation.org site, and I'll put that in the show notes. The positive effects of a label. So they say, despite their usual negative reputation, labels are not always a bad thing. There are many positive effects of labeling. Labels can allow people to find a sense of belonging and power with people with whom they relate. By taking a label that was once viewed as negative and reclaiming it, these groups are able to reestablish their power. Support for people with specific labels can be found more easily. By accepting the label, the individual can find a community that understands the challenges they are facing. They can find others who can offer moral support or advice on dealing with challenges. The idea is, when you accept it, you can reclaim that power for yourself. So when, like you said, however many years ago, queer was a bad word. Fag was a bad word. Tranny was a bad word, all filled with stigma and hate. And while there's still plenty of people out there who hate us for those words or like to throw those words at us in a derogatory fashion, once you start owning it, building that power and building a power base with people who are like you or related to you in the same level in a bigger community, you start to see, wow, I am not the only one out here. There is a massive following of people who are very much labeled, such as myself, self-describing, that I can rally behind and rally with.
Right. This is very true. And it also makes me think of just people, mostly people of privilege, mostly cisgender people that are just trying to understand everything and just trying as best as we all can, or are not trying and can just slap on the label ally and call it a freaking day when really they don't know what that means to be a good ally. So I'm seeing a lot of, or what it means to be an ally to, let's say, the trans community. And I'm seeing a lot of, I know it's trendy to say that. It's a real, ooh, you're an ally, great. But there's a lot of Instagram trans influencers that are posting what it means to be a good ally. And then in their own words, laying it out for all of us about what it means. And at the same time, maybe what it doesn't mean. Because it's very cool to say in this day and age, I'm an ally. Hey, but it's okay. You're an ally. That means you're an ally all the time. That means when so-and-so at the dinner table says something that is transphobic, that you stand up and you get messy. You may not have to be inappropriate. You may not be able to just sit silently by. Oh, I'm an ally, but yet you won't let your daughter fill in the blank. Let your son fill in the blank. You believe that these parents have allowed their children to transition and you would never allow. But you're the first person to say, oh, I'm an ally.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely makes sense. And it reminds me of the meme I see a lot on Facebook, which is don't call yourself an ally and then vote for a political party that is out to oppress those people. Right. So you can't be an ally in name only. It's got to be an action or support or endorsement or something bigger than just you saying, I'm an ally. I have the sticker that says I am. If you're not doing anything, what are you doing? I want to like now talk about the flippy flop side of labels, because this is, again, this is that pro con thing. So the negative effect of labels, while there are positive effects to labels, again, this is from TurnerSyndromeFoundation.org. While there are positive effects to labels, there are also negative effects. Labels can shape expectations that are set for other people, creating stereotypes. These stereotypes can result in unrealistic expectations or expecting less from someone despite what they're capable of. We could talk all long and hard about typical like racial stereotypes, sexual stereotypes, gender stereotypes, even the male-female who does domestic chores is like the stereotype of what the woman's supposed to do and the man's supposed to do in the home and for the family and all those things. All of that. And we've built so much of our society on these stereotypes, as well as what we've defined as the stereotypes we want to endorse on the social level and within our social contract, where it's okay for a man to be this and a woman to be that, but whoa, don't be putting pants on that girl, or don't be having that guy be a male nurse. Whoa, those things are a little odd. And yes, in my lifetime, we've seen male nurses, male secretaries go from being a joke to being just part of the fabric of society. As far as I'm aware, I don't think twice about a male nurse coming to get me to take me back to the doctor's office. And you've seen more of women in places of the police force, the military, not being in the home. When I was a kid, we'll talk about, let's call it the early 80s, where my mom was the homemaker, but then she went and she worked as a secretary at an insurance agency. And that was like this kind of weird thing for us as kids. Is why is mom working? That's what dad does. It's like, why is mom doing it? That's just so bizarre. Why is she not home to cook us dinner? We were latchkey kids for a few years there when she was out there trying to make money, because we, as kids, we didn't know that we were poor. We only knew that mom wasn't home, but yet they made it work and they had a double income for a while and we were cared for.
Right.
And here we are looking at you, Julie. Not only are you an entrepreneur, you got your own business, you're working with kids out in the school district, as well as having your own child, your own family, you're doing 100 things.
And yet there's something very, I don't know, you say all these things and yet it is my birthright, or it is my responsibility, and it is my feeling on a cellular level from that has been passed down through trauma and generations that either, oh yeah, I'm doing all those things, or why is it I'm still not doing enough? It still does not feel like enough. It still feels like I work with preschool age children from 8:30 to 1:30, and then I have a a window to really kick ass on my business and maybe get in some consultations before my daughter gets home. But oh no, she has homework, but I need to be present and I can't go back to do that because then I'm not a good mom. There's still all this not enough, not doing it right, trying to figure it all out. And that's sad. And it makes me think about your mother was out in the workforce. And yet if someone was to be like, what's your label or how do you identify or whatever, back to the future, this shit, she may say, I'm a wife and a mom.
Yeah.
You would say that. She wouldn't think anything else. It would be what, as the Jews say, with shame or with sin, the word is Shonda. It would be a Shonda for her to be like, I'm an insurance bro. You know what I mean? Because it's just like, keep that shit down. You know what I mean? Like, quiet. Don't talk about your career because that is not the main thing. Or talk about your career because it's popular now. Now it's en vogue, women in the workplace. It depends on what lifetime you're living in, I guess. It's but this true. Idea of not being enough and not doing enough, even if after you listed all those things, I was still thinking, I'm just getting back to the bar method, people. Oh, I just walked 4 miles in the morning and not seven. It's insanity, basically. All right, yeah. I'll get off my little monologue soapbox here.
No, but yes. What you're saying is so super important, which is, even though you self-describe as these different things, teacher, mother, entrepreneur, but yet you look at those things that you hold dear to yourself and you're like, but I'm failing at 7 of the 8 of them, is because we set all these expectations for ourselves. Just like I complain about not having my books done yet. It's like I've set an expectation for myself, and Judy's always going, you know, you have all these appearances and a podcast and you're doing the editing and you work a full-time job and you're helping me and you're doing this. I was like, dude, stop. But sometimes you need somebody else to come at you and say, you're doing all you can do. You're doing the best you can. And that's all you should expect for yourself. As I say that, I want to say that about labels as well, is that whatever label you use to describe yourself, in any moment, whether you have one, whether you have 20, whether you're juggling a whole bunch and you're not really sure which one's landing on you yet, just do the best you can. Because at any day, like you said, Julie, earlier, any day that label could change. One might feel stronger to you in that moment versus another. You may decide all these ones I've had sitting on my desk really don't fit me anymore because I've done enough self-assessment to realize I am now here versus there. And again, as we evolve, our labels change. And you can't just, you can sit in a label and you can have it and you can say, I identify as X, therefore I am X. And then realize in 6 months, you're like, oh yeah, I'm kind of like X plus Y now. And like, they'll eventually be like, nope, now I'm just Y. And just like, it's okay. It's okay to be fluid in that method, in that way, because there are some things that are not hard line things or things that are not like, okay, biologically, yes, I am male and that's what I am. And I accept that. And I don't really think much more about it. I'm white in my ethnicity. I'm Caucasian, Northern European. There are some things are impermeable. You can't do anything about it. They just are. But there are other things that are more personal identifications and how we see ourselves and how we see ourselves with other people. Those are things that are impermanent and can change as long as you evolve and grow into something else.
Love it.
I love you.
I love you.
Oh, I'm going to go in the same article. Again, it will be in the show notes. These are the next section, the last section. Again, I love this just kind of for people to just hear and take away and see what they like from it. How to shake a label or a stereotype. So in this list, shaking a label or stereotype is not an easy process, but it is quite fulfilling. Start by trying some of the strategies below. Number one, be yourself. I would say the best thing to be is to be yourself because that's the most authentic part of you. Number two, increase your self-confidence with the affirmation and other exercises. And I know you and I have spoken about affirmations and like when to do them and when it's important. One of the other ones is notice the labels you give to yourself and others. Another is remember to be kind to yourself and others. Build a support network of people who care about who you are, not your label, to boost your self-confidence. Build your own sense of identity beyond a single adjective. And the last is, if you believe that techniques like these are not helping you, don't be scared to go to a therapist or psychiatrist. They can offer different perspectives on your experience and maybe help you to understand yourself better.
Yay, therapy!
I do love therapy. It is important, trust me. I, as you know, I have not been a huge therapy nerd in growing up. I remember in high school, I had a counselor.
That's a good thing. Like, I feel like if Julia, growing up, I was a huge therapy nerd, I'd be like, raging trauma, your parents are therapists and you're fucked up for life. No, just kidding. But like, now, after realizing that mental health is so crucial to your evolvement, and the idea of if you ignore your childhood shit because it's in the past, it's going to find its way. It finds its way into the nucleus of our everyday lives. So to go into therapy and be like, okay, I'm not going to talk about any childhood shit and let's go, I feel like that's weird. But therapy nerd.
Well, here's the thing.
Only that.
I hear you. And as you're talking, unfortunately or fortunately, I just realized I was about to talk about when I went to my high school counselor, because I had a girlfriend who would not allow me to break up with her. And it was giving me ulcers and I was dry heaving. I couldn't get out of the house because I was so paralyzed with fear to see this person. She was in two of my classes. I was sharing her locker. So I went to my high school counselor when they're like, hey, why are you out of school these days? And I explained what was happening. And they said, all right, we're going to make sure that girl is not sitting next to you in class where she should be, where in her assigned seat. Take all your stuff, go back to your own locker. And what I realized in this moment is that I was very sensitive and vulnerable and left myself very vulnerable as a young adult. And I wore all my emotion out there. And afterwards, the counselor didn't give me a lot of coping mechanisms necessarily. And basically, I was left to be like, probably what I should do is bury all this shit way deep down, because it didn't serve me, like, to be that raw, have all these external forces affect me in such a way. I realized that I really started burying a lot of that stuff and becoming more stoic as a result, versus a counselor really set me on a path of mental health and betterment. So that's probably another reason why I don't ever talk about anything, is because I keep it all deep down inside. Because of that, I wouldn't be surprised.
Mm.
So there's another gem from the vault that is Savannah.
I love the gems from the vault that is Savannah. I literally love them. Back to labels.
I do find that what we're talking about is, again, that do not allow other people to use labels to judge you or stereotype you or to provide derogatory commentary against you. But also, don't allow yourself to be afraid to self-describe. Don't be afraid to say, I want to try this on for size, this word, this label, this adjective, this description, because it is important to understand yourself. You can't find yourself without language.
Right.
Like, you can be authentic, do a meditation of finding your center and being zen about who you are. But out in the world, unfortunately, you have to have a language. Not necessarily to say, hi, my name is, hey, my name is, it's not an Eminem song.
Ah, look at you. Love it, Slim Shady.
I got nowhere to go.
You're hilarious.
Thank you. But you do have to, like, take that into the world with you as just a part of who you are. And so you don't have to explain it to every person you meet. Hi, I'm this and this and this. But knowing that allows you to also connect, allows you to have the language to connect, allows you to find others like yourself. And I think that's when it's super, super important to have those labels to describe yourself. And again, don't worry about what those other people, how they think they are describing you, how they think they, if they understand what it means to have that label, because that's not the most important. The stronger you feel about your own label, the more you connect and adapt and have confidence in the label, then typically that allows people who judge you on the same word or description, that means less to you.
And I think that it's also important that we think about the labels we were given as children by our parents, by our teachers, by our friends, and see how they really apply to the person you are today, or challenge that and say, okay, I know I was the reliable one. I think it's really easy to put labels when it comes to birth order. If you have siblings mm-hmm. in your family, like this is whether you want to call it the favorite, the non-favorite, or whatever it is. But look at those labels and see if they're true anymore. Challenge those labels and say, all right, now today as a grown-up in these environments, I do feel like that label is true. And in other environments or in other places where your mind may wander, say, you know what, that really didn't apply to me. It was just something I was told I was. It was a descriptor that people who were God, I mean, when you're born and you're growing up, your parents essentially are God. But that's why I think a lot of children grow up with a really strange sense of God as a kind of an omnipresence, because beyond your parents are the most powerful beings. And if they say you are fill in the blank, responsible, reliable, you're going to take on that label as your own because you were told that's who you are. I think when it comes to labeling someone a good Christian or a good girl or a bad girl, those need to be examined and challenged and say, okay, so those were my descriptors growing up that people gave me before I really knew myself. Now, looking back at my childhood, what were those labels true? Or would I give myself a different label or now? And just crack those things open, because those were told to you without your consent. But I think that when you have a jock family that grows up and has a boy, they're all family members are buying them all this baby stuff that reflect that label that they are expecting this baby to be that type of person.
Oh my God, yes.
There's so much to labels, so much to be challenged about labels, and so much to when you look at it through an eye, through a critical lens, and be like, I'm just going to think about my childhood or think about what I tell myself about myself. And I'm going to challenge that. I'm going to flip it. I'm going to say, okay, what's the opposite of this? And is that also true about me?
So, so true. You are so on the money. And I just want to throw in one other thing, because we hear it a lot. And I think sometimes we don't recognize it, especially when we're growing up. It's like, why can't you be more like your brother? Why can't you be more like your sister? Where all of a sudden it's a label that somebody wants to give you because you're not living up to the expectation of getting the good grades or cleaning up after yourself.
The comparison.
Yeah, the comparison labels where all of a sudden the person you are is not good enough. Therefore, you need to be like somebody else and live up to that expectation and that label. And what damage does that do to all of us kids who have been told that we should be somebody else, that we should act like somebody else because the way we're acting now is not appropriate or not acceptable, or is that what those gods in our life want us to be? So there's so much to labeling into stereotyping what we should be and what we should look like. And God knows how much damage has been done for the middle child, let's say, who doesn't get the good grades like the sister. And all they do now is pursue good grades, no matter what. And if they don't, then they know they're a failure. And so again, we could go far and beyond labeling and expectation. It's such deep-rooted stigma and stupidity in a lot of ways. So that's when we have to be very cautious about how we say it to ourselves and to others. But yeah, you hit it. You hit it, kid.
Mm-hmm. Papa Shereel good. Papa Shereel good. Oh, yeah. I think you said hit it, and then I said, and then I heard push it. Push it.
Yeah, we break into song once in a while. It's part of who we are as people.
Yes, it's how we describe ourselves when we're saying, like, it's how we literally want to be and are.
Exactly. Well, Julie Rubenstein, you have been amazing. I love connecting with you on our Sundays. This is like that gemstone that I get to enjoy, and it just brightens up my day.
Yes, and I would label this podcast as awesome.
That's how I self-describe the co-host of this show.
Ah, sweet. All right. Bye for now.
Until next time.
You can find me on Facebook at Savannah Hawk or at Living with Crossdressing, and on Instagram at Savannah Hawk. Remember, that's H-A-U-K. And to learn more, go to my website, livingwithcrossdressing.com.
And you can find me on Instagram and Facebook at Fox and Hanger or at Julie MTF Style, as well as on our website at foxandhanger.com.
Julie, it's your moment.
The Fox and the Phoenix podcast uses Anchor, copyright 2023. Yes, nailed it.
If you enjoy our content and want to make it easier for others to find us, please share with your friends, tap the subscribe or follow button to the show wherever you're listening, give it a 5-star rating, or leave a review.
And for show ideas or comments, contact us through the podcast on Facebook at Fox and Phoenix Podcast or on Instagram at the Fox and the Phoenix Podcast _.